from WNYC in New York. This is NPR's On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
Speaking to us from a bunker in Florida. And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Hey, Bob, we meet again.
We do indeed. I apologize for the tinniness of what follows, but the microphone I have is the microphone I have.
What are you, the Donald Rumsfeld of radio announcers?
That's correct.
Well, just to save the listeners' ears for a while, I will read this intro into you.
Okay.
President Obama's first tour of Asia was heavily covered by the U.S. press.
President Obama attending to one of America's most complicated and critical relationships, China.
Commentators made sure to note the difficulties he faced.
President Obama arrived in Shanghai in a driving rain. The challenges here, though, began before his feet even touched the tarmac.
And when the president touched down at home Thursday, he was welcomed by pundits with a verdict on his trip. The consensus? They thought he'd showed an inveterate lack of vertebrae.
There is a real danger here that the Chinese will have concluded from this that the United States is a power on the wane and a president who is cautious and timid, and we can pretty much have our way.
The Atlantic's James Fallows, who has reported both from China and worked within a presidential administration, joins us to talk about the president's trip and the media coverage it engendered. Bob, take it from here.
I've been reading about the president's trip to China in the New York Times and the Washington Post in particular, and had come to discover that it was a complete fiasco. He let us down as a spokesman for American values and human rights and as a spokesman for a floating Chinese currency to improve the trade imbalance between our two countries. Did he do anything right?
You know, compared to any rational expectations of what this trip could have accomplished, President Obama did pretty well. I think the tone of the U.S. coverage says more about sort of embedded narratives and in the U.S. press mindset than it does anything that happened or didn't happen in Tokyo or Beijing or Shanghai.
What sort of narratives?
One of them is an idea that China is now our paymaster. Therefore, American presidents must act as petitioners. And I think that China has much less leverage than that image would imply, and we're much more mutually at each other's mercy than is usually suggested. And also, one assumption from this tone is that if we weren't in debt to the Chinese, Obama would have gone there and have pounded his fist on the table and say, we really disapprove your policy in Tibet. We really want people to be let out of jails. Number one, that's not how Barack Obama is ever, anywhere, in any circumstance. And number two, I think nobody who has ever dealt with the Chinese leadership thinks that is a way you accomplish things, whether it's on currency values or environmental cooperation or anything else.
Now, let's go to the text, because the pieces I'm actually referring to are an editorial in the New York Times, a piece by Paul Krugman, the economics columnist with a somewhat broader portfolio than that, and Dana Milbank of the Washington Post. And they all kind of acknowledge that the president did this, this, and this, for example, raise the issue of Tibet, raise the issue of human rights, raise the issue of the currency imbalance. But there was always a but. He should have done more. Is that a fair analysis that the president should have been more assertive?
I guess it's fair on a compared to what basis. I think if you apply the metric of any American president will behave more or less in his own nature and his own political style when he's traveling around the world, then you have a pretty realistic projection of how they will be. When Bill Clinton was in China in his first visit after Tiananmen Square in the late 1990s, he held a kind of rollicking town meeting, which was like the other town meetings Bill Clinton has held.
Clinton famously criticized the Chinese for Tiananmen Square. And that is one of the points made by the various editorialists saying if President Clinton could be so bold, why couldn't President Obama?
While standing next to Hu Jintao in Beijing, he said, we believe you should meet with the Dalai Lama, which is at the moment a much more sensitive issue in China than Tiananmen is. In his appearance in Shanghai, when asked about the Great Firewall, when asked about freedom of expression, Barack Obama made the points, I think, about as well as you could expect a visiting American statesman to make. Did he do a perfect job? Of course not. I'm mainly reacting against the tone that this was a disaster, a failure, a humiliation. If you want to think of that, remember the first George Bush vomiting on the Japanese prime minister back in 1991. Now, that's a humiliation.
Okay, that was a faux pas. So to what do you attribute the kind of reflexive criticism of a president who is acknowledged to have done some of what these commentators were looking for, but not quite enough.
I think, number one, if you have a traveling political press corps, which is mainly concerned with the way the president is doing on his home terrain, if they think he is being weak, if they think he's losing ground, if they think he's not standing up for himself, it's natural to see those things in a foreign setting, too. I think also there is the background sense that China has gotten stronger and more dominant over the United States than, in my view, it really is. And if that's what you're thinking, if you think that anything the president doesn't say must be because he needs that next $1 billion in Chinese money, then you make that connection, whereas I think there are other explanations of what he did and did not say.
All right, Jim. Well, as always, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bob.
James Fallows is a correspondent for The Atlantic. He spends a whole lot of time in China, but is speaking to us this week from Washington, D.C.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.